This podcast is brought to you by ClearBridge Investments. Meet an evolving economy confidently with ClearBridge Active Equities, the foundation of a resilient portfolio. ClearBridge, a Franklin Templeton company. Go to clearbridge.com to learn more.
Please stay tuned for important disclosure information at the conclusion of this episode.
Hi, and welcome to The Long View. I'm Christine Benz, Director of Personal Finance and Retirement Planning for Morningstar.
And I'm Jeff Batak, Chief Ratings Officer for Morningstar Research Services.
Our guest on the podcast today is David Lau, founder and CEO of DPL Financial Partners, which develops and distributes low-cost, commission-free insurance and annuity products. In addition, DPL Financial Partners provides tools and educational resources for registered investment advisors and individual investors. Prior to founding DPL, David was Chief Operating Officer of Jefferson National, and before that, he was principal and co-founder of the Oyster House Group, a management consulting firm. He also served as Chief Marketing Officer of E-Trade Bank and its predecessor, Telebank. David received his bachelor's degree in economics from the College of William and Mary. David, welcome to The Long View.
Thanks, Christine and Jeff. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Well, we're happy to have you here. We wanted to start by doing a little bit of stage setting. Annuities are a broad and complicated basket, and it includes a lot of different product types. So what are we talking about when we say annuity? Can you discuss some of the common characteristics?
Sure. So when you think about an annuity, most people always just think about like a SPIA. Generally, they think about, you know, immediately about like the SPIA, which is single premium immediate annuity, which is that's where you turn over your assets to the insurance company and you generate an income stream. But actually, there's about six different types of annuities as I think about them, you know, depending on how you lump them together. But when you think about an annuity, basically, I think about the structure. So the fundamental structure of an annuity is, you know, an account or policy that gives you tax deferral and some other benefits, with the ability to annuitize. And that's where you do turn over your assets to the carrier. Most people do not do that. But if you think about the, you know, annuity types, you have some that are super simple, right? Fixed annuities or, you know, MIGAs, those are, you know, CD-like products giving you a fixed rate. And then you have income annuities that, you know, again, are those products that you're basically buying an income stream in exchange for your assets. But the most popular types of annuities are really the, you know, variable annuities, fixed indexed annuities, and, you know, increasingly now what's known as buffered annuities or RILAs, registered index linked annuities. And those are the most popular products, you know, in the marketplace. And so when you're thinking about annuities, you have to ask yourself basically, you know, a couple of questions. They fall into a couple of different categories. Are you looking for something that's going to give you more like a fixed return, or are you looking for a variable return, you know, participating in some different investment structure? And are you using it for, you know, accumulation and risk mitigation, or are you going to use it for income? So those are some of the very broad ways, you know, I think about annuities and what's available out there.
And I think we want to explore some of those details further with you as the conversation goes on. But before we did that, we also wanted to talk about your motivations for starting DPL Financial Partners. And I'm going to read something from your website. It says, "We firmly believed and still believe it's not annuities that registered investment advisors dislike and mistrust. It's what they become: complex, opaque, and expensive products that benefit the people who sell them more than those who buy them." Can you provide a bit of background on how it happened that insurance products, both life insurance and annuities, got so entangled with high commission?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think really, I mean, to be fair to the, you know, insurance industry, it's more that that's where financial services really started, right? If you would go back a few decades, pretty much everything was, you know, commissioned and transactional and stuff like that. What's happened in insurance is insurance hasn't evolved with the rest of the industry, right? So while the rest of the industry has moved to, you know, no load, transparent, low cost product, you know, annuities, you know, and insurance really hasn't done that. So they're basically working on an old business model that hasn't evolved. And if you ask you why it hasn't evolved, I would tell you probably, and you know, this is just my opinion, is that the commissions and the compensation are just too rich. You know, it's hard to get away from when you've got an existing distribution, you know, methodology and you know, paradigm where the people who are selling the products are getting compensated really well, whether it's the, you know, individual agent or broker or the wholesaler, you know, representing the products for the carrier, you know, they're getting compensated well, and that's a tough thing to overcome. But so part of my, you know, given the statement, you know, you read, Jeff, I mean, the reason I really started DPL is because I've always been a consumer advocate, you know, for my entire financial services career. I started in the early 90s. I was the chief marketing officer at the first internet bank in the country. And the thesis behind that bank was not so much to let's be on the internet and let's be cool, because that's the thing that was, you know, hot at the time. It was about consumer value. It was, if we don't have to build branches to distribute commodity products, that eliminates a whole lot of overhead. So can we then provide much better products, you know, to our customers? And so with DPL, it's kind of the same thesis with insurance, but rather than eliminating branches, you're eliminating commissions and you're changing distribution. And when you do that, you have a very meaningful impact, you know, on these products, which, you know, gets me to kind of, you know, part of the second point of why I started it. These are important product structures. You know, annuities are really beneficial products. You know, they've got capabilities inherent in their structure that are really valuable to, you know, financial advisors for risk mitigation and financial planning. And the problem is that, you know, the commissions have just kind of bastardized the products. So you lose sight of the intrinsic value of the structure because there's so much, you know, cost and complexity built in because of the commission. But when you eliminate the commission, you solve, you know, all of those problems.
So you've set up DPL Financial in a way that addresses that. DPL provides a platform where registered investment advisors can compare and buy low-cost annuities. You use a membership model for that, whereby RIAs pay a fee to be part of the DPL community. I saw on your website, for example, firms with under $100 million in AUM pay $1,000 a year, and then the membership fees scale up from there for larger AUM levels. Why did you set it up that way? And can you talk about what firms get when they are members of DPL?
Sure. So, you know, that was one of the things, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and you're starting a business, you're like, you know, this is an interesting concept. This is an interesting idea. Let's bring this membership concept, you know, to the business. And the benefit is, and you know, nobody really has a model like this that I'm aware of. So we didn't, you know, have, you know, something to point to and say, okay, let's look at how they do it. So we think this is a, you know, pretty unique model. But the reason we bring a membership component to it is, you know, number one, we believe we provide a lot of value to the firms we work with. And we work with thousands of advisors, you know, across the industry, you know, at this point. And what we really are is a partner to help the firm grow. We're going to help them grow and serve their clients, you know, better with more holistic solutions than they had before. You know, so part of, again, my motivation for starting the company was, you know, I've always been somebody who's been attracted, because I am a consumer advocate, to the fiduciary model. And if you look at the way the advisory space has, you know, evolved, the fee-only advisor, you know, is now looking at, without being able to provide insurance solutions and some other solutions, at a competitive disadvantage to, like, when I got in the industry, you know, 17 years ago. You know, a fiduciary's differentiation was, I charge on fees, I don't accept commissions, and I act, you know, as a fiduciary. Now, pretty much every advisor is saying that, right? They're managing money on fees. They're acting in a client's best interest. And, you know, while we do know there's a difference between that and fiduciary, for most clients, they don't understand that difference. And financial advisors have been broadening what they're delivering to their clients. right? So now it's, you know, many advisors are leading with planning. Asset management is just a component of what they're doing, and they're becoming financial planners and wealth managers. And so if you're an RIA and you can't provide insurance solutions, you're really missing out on being able to holistically serve your client. And now, in order to, you know, fulfill the financial plans, you're going to have to send your client, you know, down the road to somebody who's now more and more competitive with you every day. You know, that New York Life agent or that Northwestern Mutual agent is, you know, very much looking to be the same financial quarterback for that client as you are. So that was another motivation. And that's why, again, tying it back to the membership, you know, what we provide is of real value to the firm because we can help them, you know, fulfill, you know, their client's financial plan, their insurance needs, and do it in a real, you know, fiduciary value-added way.
Yeah, following up on that, you mentioned how you cater to RIAs who want to provide their clients with low-cost annuities and life insurance, and that setup can clearly be beneficial for their clients. But a related issue is the advisors who charge their clients a percentage of their portfolios might still avoid annuities because it reduces the assets they can earn fees on. And so how do you navigate that in practice? Is that a headwind for, you know, the advisors who might otherwise consider being members on the DPL platform?
Well, I mean, it used to be, but that's one of the things, you know, we've solved for. So in setting up DPL, you know, I had been the chief operating officer at an insurance carrier, you know, Jefferson National, you know, for over a decade, you know, focusing on RIAs. And part of the change that we made in making annuities usable for fee-based, fee-only advisors, for people who are charging on AUMs, is we made them billable. So, you know, now these products are billable AUM assets. So that objection's pretty much been eliminated. So we serve at DPL as kind of a two-sided marketplace. We're working with carriers to help them build products and, you know, processes and technology that supports the fee-only advisor so that they can bill, you know, their fee out of an annuity and they can get, you know, data feeds and they can get integrations into their desktop so that, you know, these are just assets under management like anything else. So while that used to be, you know, some advisors used to refer that, you know, as a nuicide, right? When they're managing money on, you know, on AUM, if they, you know, recommend an annuity to a client, they're losing assets and therefore revenue. But that's not the case anymore, you know. And I think in large part because of the work we do with carriers. So over the last, you know, 5 years, you're seeing, you know, more and more carriers with more and more products, you know, coming to market that are, you know, billable AUM, you know, assets, you know, for the advisor. I mean, think of it much in the way of, you know, the evolution of mutual funds. And this is, you know, part of my model for DPL is, you know, Schwab created OneSource as kind of the first no-load mutual fund marketplace. We're creating the first no-load insurance marketplace. So, you know, when you're eliminating, you know, you're taking basically a different share class effectively. So now, you know, those, you know, old, you know, A shares and whatnot that you would never be able to bill a fee on, you know, everyone's using iShares, you know, basically we're taking, you know, annuities, getting rid of the commissions and bringing out effectively a new share class, basically.
Are there any other examples you can share, you know, from these collaborations with insurance companies where you're aiming to help them create products that are a good fit for the RIA marketplace? Can you share examples of, you know, any of these collaborations that have come to fruition where you're obviously in touch with the RIAs and you've been able to say, hey, insurance companies, there's really an appetite for this type of product?
Yeah, so it's really interesting the way that's evolved. So at Jefferson National, you know, we, you know, kind of broke through in the RIA market by having, you know, what's known as an investment-only variable annuity. So just a super low-cost variable annuity, you know, no benefits, no guarantees, no riders, and it was just a tax-deferred investment vehicle. And that was, you know, very successful. So a lot of carriers thought, okay, the way to get into the RIA market is create these products. And it was too much. What they really needed to be doing was creating the products that they're good at. So when we have gone to the carriers, I've got basically one guiding principle for the carriers as we look at product development and product design is we want to bring products to market that can be used and not sold. And it's a little bit for them to get their head around what exactly that means, because they've been in such, you know, their own mindset for so long that, you know, we really aren't looking for the product that's got 27 different riders on it. You know, we're looking for a product that you can, you know, simply use as an advisor to solve problems, you know, within the portfolio or provide solutions within the financial plan. And if you've got a, you know, highly complex, you know, product, you know, that's got all kinds of different features, like that's not really what an RIA is looking for. So when we work with carriers, we're looking at, you know, simplifying products and making them more, you know, clear and transparent, because again, these are valuable structures, and one of the best ways advisors bring value to their clients is by leveraging the structures that are available to them, you know, to get the best results, you know, for the client. And an annuity is a very valuable structure.
Can you give an illustration of how DPL might work in practice? What an investor might pay in fees for the same annuity purchased with the help of their RIA on DPL's platform versus going through a commission salesperson?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, when we talk about what we do and, you know, making, you know, no load commission free products, you know, everybody is like, oh, that's immediately, yeah, of course, that's a good idea. And then when you see the impact, you're like, oh, wow, that's a really good idea, because the distribution expenses typically built into a commission product are very hefty, right? I mean, you could be looking at, you know, an 8% commission. You've got, you know, paying internal wholesalers and marketing costs and paying for steak dinners and ball games and all the stuff that, you know, carriers traditionally do. That's all built into the pricing of the commission product. Well, in our products, we can eliminate those things. And when you eliminate those things, you're taking the price down of the product, you know, 80 to 85%. You know, so the average, you know, to bring it, you know, to real numbers, the average variable annuity, you know, just the product costs, you know, what's known as the M&E, is, you know, about 140 basis points on the commission side. You know, our variable annuity products are 20 to 30 basis points. So, you know, very, very much cheaper. And then, you know, within other products like fixed annuities or fixed index annuities, what you see how that manifests, because those products often don't have distinct product costs, they're spread products, you see better rates. So, you know, instead of, you know, a product that might pay 2%, ours might pay 3%, you know, that kind of thing within the fixed products.
So I wanted to talk about the life insurance perspective on this. I'm curious, has it been an uphill battle to get insurance companies to work in this way versus how they'd been doing it in so many years? Because it does seem like they might think this sounds good, but do we risk cannibalizing this whole commissioned piece that has been our bread and butter for so long?
Yeah, so it is interesting. So, you know, life insurance is a little bit, you know, different than annuities, and that has been a little bit more of an uphill battle. And, you know, ironically, it's one of those things where, you know, regulation that's come into play in order to try to protect, you know, consumers actually kind of backfires. So when we work with carriers, you know, when you take the, you know, the commission out of a, you know, like a permanent life insurance product, term is different. I mean, term, you know, is a highly competitive marketplace. There's so many comparison engines and things like that. You know, that's a price competitive market. Permanent life insurance is not. But when you take that commission out, you're radically changing the product. So many permanent life products, it might pay the insurance agent, you know, 100% of the first year premium, maybe 80% of the first year premium. Meaning if you were putting $10,000 into the policy, maybe 8,000 of it's going to the agent and only 2,000 is actually going to the policy. When you take that commission out and all of the premium is going to the policy, you wind up with a radically better product. And so the regulations that really hinder the creation of permanent life policies have to do with requiring agents to use the companies that they're selling's best product, their best priced product. And so you wind up with carriers who don't, you know, to your point, Christine, don't want to cannibalize existing distribution. If they create these products and then they're available to their, you know, traditional, you know, distribution, that would create problems for those agents. You don't have the same issues, you know, with annuities.
I wanted to ask about annuity providers. Has it been an uphill battle to get them to participate in this marketplace?
Actually, you know, quite the opposite. So, you know, we have, when I started the company, number one, I started calling some carriers before I actually launched and said, hey, I'm thinking about building this platform. You know, would you be interested in participating? And universally, the answer is yes, you know, 100%, you know, for a number of reasons. One is, you know, the RIA market, you know, the fee-only market is a market that is, you know, growing enormously, as we all know, and a market in which they've never participated, you know, in any material way. So they see it as, you know, one, we can open up this new market. And then number two, you know, when you're working with the carrier, you know, at the CEO level, which is typically what we're doing, is they see the future, right? I mean, financial services, as I was talking about earlier, you know, has largely moved away from, you know, this commission structure. So they see it that if they want to continue working with financial advisors, they really need to figure out how to deliver products, you know, on a fee basis rather than a commission basis. And that has implications not only in the product design, but in, you know, the technology that they build and compliance and all kinds of things like that. So we, you know, hear from pretty much everybody. We're working with, you know, 14 of the top 20 annuity providers, you know, right now. And, you know, we're in discussions with a few others. And generally, you know, almost without exception, you know, they're calling us, you know, rather than us calling them.
I wanted to shift and talk a little bit about another dimension of the process by which one would assess the appropriateness of an annuity or an insurance product, which is insurance company financial strength. And some annuity critics point to insurance company risk as another potential risk factor for annuities. How legitimate is it to be concerned about an insurance company running into financial problems, in your opinion?
I mean, you can never say anything's risk-free, right? But I mean, relative to other things you're going to invest in, investing in annuities or insurance products through an insurance carrier is a very safe thing to do. You know, there's tremendous, you know, oversight and regulation of insurance carriers so that the failure rates of insurance carriers are exceptionally low, particularly at a national level. When you do hear, you know, about a carrier that got into, you know, some trouble, they're probably like a small, you know, regional, more local, you know, carrier. But the big carriers, I mean, they're extremely well regulated. They've got, you know, lots of cash reserves against their guarantees. And, you know, there's state guarantee associations, and they're being regulated by, you know, several entities, state regulators, you know, SEC, FINRA, you know, could be all kinds of people overseeing, you know, the carrier. But in general, compared to most things you could invest in, an insurance product is going to be very safe.
Well, how healthy are those state guarantee associations? I think there have been some questions about that, whether they truly would be there as a backstop, especially in perhaps certain states. We live in Illinois, for example. How do you think about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be clear, the state guarantees are not FDIC, right? So, I mean, this is not, you know, the federal government, you know, standing behind banks. You know, this is state guarantee associations. And the way that those work, you know, just at a very simple high level, is that carriers who sell products in those states, you know, have to allocate based on their percentage of sales in those states, you know, resources to provide a, you know, backstop to any, you know, company that's doing business in that state that might have problems. But generally what happens is when a carrier is running into financial trouble, there's many steps taken by regulators before it ever gets to state guarantee association. So, you know, as soon as a carrier might start having trouble, you know, the regulators might stop them from issuing new policies. They're going to, you know, put companies up for sale or blocks of business up for sale. They're going to step in and kind of mitigate some of that, you know, potential risk, you know, long before it gets to a, you know, call it a catastrophic level.
How should investors proceed if they're putting an amount in excess of the coverage limits into an annuity? Is that an argument for buying multiple annuities from multiple carriers, or do you think it's just kind of a non-issue given some of the mitigants that you mentioned before?
you don't see it happening as much. I mean, you, like, you know, the equivalent, I guess, would be, you know, like a bond ladder or a CD ladder, and you're putting, you know, assets across different institutions. You see that a little bit, you know, when people are using, you know, fixed annuities or, you know, something like that. But generally, you don't see a lot of it, you know, where, you know, people are splitting benefits between different, you know, between different carriers. When they're looking at income guarantees or something like that. Though I wouldn't say it's an imprudent thing to do. It probably does make some sense to do it. But generally, you know, you haven't seen that in the past because, again, you're looking at point solutions that have been sold by an, you know, individual salesperson, you know, selling an annuity to a particular person. And they're, you know, more of that salesperson than the traditional, you know, asset manager, financial advisor. So, you know, from that point of view, it, you know, there could be some sense to it, but, you know, generally you don't see a lot of it.
We wanted to dig into some different annuity types to pick your brain a little bit. Many advisors, many RIAs, financial planners are willing to take a look at the very basic income annuities that you referenced earlier, the SPIAs or single premium immediate annuities, and maybe deferred income annuities as well. Does the DPL platform include those products, or are advisors who are inclined toward them better off going straight to the insurance company if they're looking at products like that?
Yeah, we definitely, you know, have those type of products. We've got, you know, every type of annuity product. And yeah, you're generally going to get, you know, the best available products, you know, through DPL. So what we see is, like, you know, while many advisors, you know, think of those products, the, you know, immediate annuities or deferred income, and, you know, people talk about them, but they're, you know, pretty much wildly unpopular products, right? They're a tiny part of the, you know, the annuity marketplace. It's something like 3-4% of annual sales are in, you know, immediate annuities or deferred annuities. So most advisors, you know, are looking towards, you know, variable annuities or fixed indexed annuities. And now, you know, these buffer annuities that, you know, are relatively new to the marketplace, been around maybe 7-8 years. And the reason most advisors think of, you know, SPIAs and DIAs is, one, those are always been the lowest commissioned products, so that, you know, there's, you know, better value in those, but also because they have a very limited point of view on, you know, how you would use an annuity or why you would use an annuity. And mostly in that case, you're just thinking, okay, I'm trying to use the annuity to protect longevity risk, you know, within a financial plan. And therefore, most, you know, advisors will say, oh yeah, I don't use annuities all that much because I'm only thinking about them for clients who could potentially, you know, run out of money or outlive their assets. But actually, the best use cases for annuities are really for risk management and, you know, and just general income. You know, so when you look at the academic study around annuities, and academics, you know, are universally, and you can't say that about many things, universally in support of using annuities and financial plans for retirement income. The reason is because they generate the income more efficiently than traditional fixed income does. So when we talk to advisors, we're kind of educating on those use cases. You know, one, let's look at income. If your client is going to take income from their portfolio, it's likely that the annuity can generate that income far more efficiently than your fixed income. So let's look at allocating some portion of your fixed income to an annuity when the client's getting, you know, near retirement. And the other is risk management, particularly in, you know, like markets like this. And you look at historic strategies for risk management for, you know, advisors who are only using investments, it's really diversification, you know, diversification of asset classes and geographies and other things to create risk management within the portfolio. But there's so much more correlation today than there used to be between all those different asset classes that when stocks are going down, so are bonds. And, you know, now, you know, so are crypto. You know, some people talk about using crypto as a diversifier. Crypto is going down too with the market. So, you know, insurance is a way to truly bring risk management, you know, into the portfolio and, you know, have, you know, assets that are protected from downsides, you know, regardless of what's going on in the market. So those are really the two big use cases, you know, we talk to advisors about.
Maybe can you just, you used the term efficient before and how annuities boast greater efficiency than bonds in certain circumstances. Can you just talk about what you mean by efficiency in that context?
Sure. So the annuity's got, again, some structural advantages. And, you know, an annuity is a product, you know, that when you're using an annuity that's designed for income, that is a product particularly and specifically designed for income. And so the annuity is going to, you know, enjoy the benefit of risk pooling, you know, with the carrier, you know, pooling the risk of, you know, many, many lives, and adding that benefit of risk pooling on top of effectively the interest rate that is available through investments. So if you, you know, Wade Fowle, who's a, you know, well-known retirement researcher, you know, he's got a chart that shows like in historic interest rate times where, you know, the 10 years yielding, you know, 5.2% or whatever, you know, the average is something like that. An annuity is going to generate about 22% more income, meaning 22% more efficient in that kind of interest rate environment. That's the benefit of that risk pooling. In low interest rate environments like we're in today, even though rates have been rising, you're looking at more like a 40% benefit. So we've got a tool, you know, and this is one of the things our members get access to is our technology. We've got a tool that will allow you to compare your fixed income strategy to an annuity. So in this kind of marketplace, what that 40% more efficiency means, if you have somebody who you're looking to fund income in retirement. Say you want to fund $50,000 a year for 30 years. That's your retirement. If you want to fund that through fixed income at like 3%, that's going to take about $1.2, $1.3 million in your fixed income you know, allocation. You can fund it with an annuity for, you know, $750,000. So you're looking at a massive difference in efficiency in funding that income need. And then what that creates, and again, this goes back to, you know, the academic research, you know, and the academic recommendation on how to think about annuities, is now you have a surplus. You know, so you have a gap of $400,000 or $500,000 that you didn't need to allocate towards that income goal, which you can now invest for legacy or discretionary spending. So you get so much more efficiency and true liquidity within the portfolio.
I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about specifics for each of those use cases that you mentioned. So you're just talking a little bit about income production and how an annuity could fit there. And I want to also talk about risk mitigation. But let's talk about specific annuity types. If an advisor saying, or an individual investor saying, I'm not going to earn much from my traditional bond allocation, and we're also seeing a lot of volatility in the bond market, what's sort of the annuity prescription in that instance?
So if you're looking at, you know, kind of accumulation phase, you know, you look at, you know, products that can provide, you know, a bond like, you know, return. And, you know, for us, that's, you know, MYGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities. Those are basically just a fancy name for fixed annuities that, you know, the rate is guaranteed for more than 1 year. Those products, you know, right now, you know, we have, you know, 4 year products paying, you know, 4%. So you're getting, you know, a really good interest rate, and you're getting it tax deferred, which is, again, the advantage of the annuity when you're talking about fixed income. Because one of the common concerns advisors have about annuities is, you know, the taxable nature of them, which is that they're taxed at ordinary income rates when you take, you know, withdrawals or get, you know, get payments out. But for, you know, fixed income, that's always also taxed at ordinary income. So when you can tax defer ordinary income, that's a smart thing to do. So we see, you know, the use of fixed annuities and MYGAs, and then fixed indexed annuities, which are, you know, again, fixed products that you have downside protection. So for the individual or the client, you know, they can't lose assets in the policy due to the market. And within those products, you basically have two investment options. You've got the fixed account, and again, our fixed accounts in those products are paying, you know, 3 to 3.5%, I believe, right now. And then you have indices that you can invest in, so like the S&P 500 index. And so you can get a diversified source of return for your fixed income. So if you allocate to that index, you're going to get a cap, but you're also getting that floor. So you can't lose money in that, you know, regardless of the performance of the index, but you could get a cap, you know, up to 6 or I think even 9% or, you know, some of our higher ones right now. So you can get a return in fixed income if you're going to the fixed account of, you know, 3-3.5%, or you can put it in the index where you're going to get a, you know, call it a 0-9% return. And so, you know, those are really great risk mitigation products, you know, in a portfolio because they're truly uncorrelated to the market.
One issue with annuities, especially fixed index annuities, is that it seems that there's the potential for insurance companies to change up the features and benefits of the new products they're offering based on market environment in a way that's beneficial for them. If the insurer is pessimistic about what the equity and bond markets might offer over the next couple of decades, for example, it's going to create annuities where the insurance company won't get into trouble by offering features that are too rich. So the thinking goes, is that a fair way to look at it? Or do you think that's a little bit too sort of pessimistic?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if pessimistic is the right word, but I wouldn't look at it that way. Because if you think about the insurance carrier, you know, what is an insurance carrier at its heart? It's a risk mitigation company, right? So they're all about risk mitigation. They're not in the business of forecasting markets or what's going to go on. So, you know, they're really trying to generate, you know, when you look at, you know, a fixed indexed annuity, the indices are basically, you know, a collared option strategy, right? So they're not making bets in the market. They're just, you know, creating a collared option strategy with, you know, zero floors and whatever, you know, whatever cap they can purchase, you know, in the options market. So they're not really, you know, looking to have forecasts on, you know, which way the market's going to perform. For them, they want to be neutral in that regard. That's not how they're looking to make money. You know, they want to provide, you know, a neutral benefit, you know, within that index, and they want to price it, you know, as perfectly as they can. You know, they're going to make in those products, they're simply making a spread. Just like, you know, bonds or CDs or, you know, any other, you know, fixed instrument, they're really just working off the spread. They're not trying to take, you know, any risk relative to, you know, which direction the market might go.
Well, I know DPL does provide advisors with feedback on annuities that their clients may bring to them, where the advisor is looking to do his or her due diligence on the annuity that's in the portfolio or that is part of the client's assets. So does it ever happen that when DPL is doing these reviews that the product that the investor has is actually a really great one that the person should hang on to? Can you provide some feedback on that?
Sure. I would say I would characterize it, you know, sometimes you run into, like, there was a, you know, an old commissioned product that was sold that had, you know, rich benefits that the client shouldn't, you know, get rid of. So in general, the answer is yes. I mean, we absolutely look at, you know, what's best for the client. And again, we've got technology that does that. That's one of the, you know, remarkable pieces of technology. I think it's the only, you know, comparison tool like it, you know, for, you know, financial advisors or even, you know, consumers who own an annuity. You know, how do you compare them or understand what you have? We built a tool that models over 2,500 annuities and 25,000 riders and 400,000 price points. So you can look up the existing annuity, you know, tell us a little bit about it, you know, what's the account balance, what's the benefit base, you know, et cetera, and a little bit about the client. And then we'll tell you if we, you know, have something that would improve that situation. And most of the time we do, but if whatever the product happened to be super rich or, you know, right now the market's down, the benefit that the client may have built up in the product may not make sense to lose. You know, we'll definitely, you know, point that out for the advisor along with advice on how to use the product. So, you know, oftentimes the advisor or the client don't even know what they have. We might tell them, you know, you're in a good situation here, but turn on the income rider. People forget maybe you have to do that. So, you know, we try to, you know, provide, again, whatever advice is in the best interest of the consumer.
I wanted to shift and talk about taxes and asset location, if we could. Annuity critics sometimes lament the tax treatment of annuity income, saying that annuity purchasers turn assets that would otherwise be eligible for the long-term capital gains or dividend tax rates into assets that are taxed at ordinary income tax rates.
Yep.
Do you think that's a fair way to look at it, or do you think it's oversimplistic?
I mean, I would say that it's something just like any other investment, like you have to understand what the characteristics of it are. So, I mean, I don't know, 15 years ago, I wrote a white paper on this, you know, basically, you know, how to use an annuity for asset location. So, you know, I'm not the hugest fan of using variable annuities for income, but what variable annuities are really good for is asset location. So, you know, if you can get a, you know, a really cheap variable annuity, like I was mentioning, maybe 20 basis points, you know, for high income earners or people who are in high tax brackets or maxing out their 401k or IRA, and then you've got a really cheap investment vehicle, like a, you know, a no load variable annuity, locating the right assets can, you know, regardless of the tax treatment, can be a really smart thing to do to enhance, you know, portfolio performance really without increasing risk. Meaning if you're going to be investing in fixed income, you know, generally that makes sense, as we were talking about earlier, to tax defer. So locate, you know, some of your fixed income within the annuity. If you, you know, are investing in, you know, funds that have, you know, active management and there's high turnover rates, you know, that can generate a lot of short-term, you know, capital gains. That could make sense to tax defer, or, you know, REITs or other things that generate ordinary income, you know, it can be, you know, a really smart thing to do to put in, you know, to a variable annuity. But, you know, to your point, Jeff, if you're looking at, you know, an S&P 500 index fund, I mean, that makes almost no sense to tax defer, right? So there's really no great tax benefit of putting that into an annuity in particular.
David, you referenced RILAs earlier in the conversation and noted that these are really hot products today. These are registered index-linked annuities. Can you walk us through how they work and what the attraction is for advisors today?
Yeah, so they are, and you know, the insurance world always does such a great job of naming products, right? So registered index linked annuity. So they're kind of colloquial called, you know, buffered annuities. And basically these are kind of like structured note products. And for us, you know, they were introduced maybe 8 years ago. I think it was AXA, now Equitable, who introduced the first product. And the way they work is sort of like that fixed index annuity, but instead of, you know, that zero floor that the fixed index has, there is, you know, a buffer of loss that the carrier will, you know, absorb and price those options at. So for the fixed index annuity, you're going to say you invest in the S&P index, like I was talking about, you have a zero floor, you can't lose money in the strategy. And then maybe you've got, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9% cap that you can earn. And so we look at that as more of a fixed income, you know, type replacement within a portfolio. For the buffered annuity or the RILA, what you're going to get instead of that zero floor might be a 10% floor, meaning a 10% loss. So they're going to cover the carrier, and it can work in either direction. Some have, you know, absorb the first loss, some take the tail risk, but you can take, you know, the carrier will absorb in the products I like personally a little better, the first 10% of loss. So if you're invested in the S&P index and the index goes down 8%, the client loses, or the individual loses nothing, because it's, you know, got that buffer of protection. If the index goes down 12%, then, you know, the client or the individual is losing 2% because they've got that 10% of protection. And the advantage of using, you know, a product like that over the fixed index product is you're going to get cap rates, which are much higher because you don't have that zero floor of protection. So the cap rates on those products in an S&P is more like, you know, 15 to 18%. So the reason they're so popular, as you can imagine, is, okay, I can get some S&P exposure here while having a really good downside protection that can buffer some of the losses that could happen in a volatile year. And so those are kind of newly popular, you know, on our platform. In the first, you know, 3 years of our existence, we sold very few of those. And then, as you can imagine, this year, you know, advisors have been more like, okay, now that, you know, buffered product you guys were educating us about, let's hear about that again. You know, we're starting to see the value, which is, you know, in large part what we're seeing across the board. Advisors attracted to, you know, products with, you know, true risk mitigation capabilities, you know, because it, people, you know, honestly just, you know, got complacent. We had a very long bull market run and, you know, portfolios were getting heavier and heavier, you know, overweight to equities. And, you know, a lot of that risk was masked up until, you know, this year, really. And so now, you know, you're having advisors really look at, you know, alternatives to fixed income and products that can deliver true risk mitigation.
You've talked about bringing other insurance products to the DPL platform, specifically long-term care, life and disability products. How far along are you in that process, and how big a deal are fees and commissions in those marketplaces?
So I'll start with the end of that question. The fees and commissions are a big deal in terms of the pricing. They're still, you know, heavily, you know, commissioned products. You wind up with, you know, call it a 25 to 40% pricing advantage, you know, in those type of products. They're a little different than annuities where, you know, you really want to make them billable assets for the advisor. You know, those are more true insurance policies where the benefit is not that you can increase AUM for the advisor, but that you're just going to get a better product to the end consumer. So each of those is a little bit of a different challenge. Long-term care is the one, you know, I've been wanting to solve for a while, and it's just difficult. The, you know, traditional long-term care products where, you know, you're paying a premium in order to get coverage for long-term care have become pretty challenging. And number one, they've gotten more expensive, you know, than they have been historically. And I think that's because, you know, carriers mispriced them originally. And, you know, so there's been a lot of news about, you know, increasing costs of long-term care insurance. So if you have a policy, the cost has been going up. And then the other thing is for new issues, they're underwriting much more stringently. So the big problem, you know, companies like Genworth got into was because they viewed these policies very much like disability, and that, you know, the usage would be very much like disability products. Turns out that's not true at all. So if you own a long-term care product, you're probably going to use it, is what they learned. So the challenge in long-term care, as we all know, is typically with clients or people who have Alzheimer's. So if you today in traditional long-term care insurance, if you've got any family history of Alzheimer's, you're going to have a really difficult time finding a policy because those are the kind of long-term care stays that can, you know, be financially devastating and go on, you know, 10, 15 years. So that's a really challenging product, you know, to solve for. So what we did, we designed a hybrid product that is based on an annuity, you know, as its, you know, fundamental product. And the reason we did is basically said, okay, we can't necessarily solve all the problems, you know, of long-term care, but what we can do is try to address the financial problem. And the financial problem being basically as a retiree, your costs just went up. So what we designed was an annuity product that will provide you, it's a fixed indexed, you know, product that provides you with a very safe product with no underwriting, importantly, that will provide you with a really good income stream throughout your retirement. And then should you need long-term care, you qualify for two of the six, you know, you can't do perform two of the six ADLs, activities of daily living, your income will double for 5 years. So, you know, we think that's, you know, it's not a perfect solution, but it's a pretty good one. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, some other products, you know, on the long-term care side. Then disability, you know, we've got a couple of different, you know, relationships we're working on, you know, on disability and getting pricing out on disability products. But, you know, I would say, you know, in the next 6 months, we should be able to come to market.
To follow up on that long-term care question, it seems like when you talk to individuals and advisors about the type of product they'd like to see in that market, it would be the kind with like maybe a longer elimination period where the person would self-fund for perhaps a couple of years, and then the insurance would kick in to cover them in case of that catastrophic, you know, 10-year, 15-year long-term care event. What's the viability of such products? Are they simply not going to fly with state insurance regulators? That's what I've heard in the past, but I'm not sure if that's true.
It is true. Unfortunately, again, this is what, this is like an unintended consequence. Cause I agree. Like that's the product, particularly for, you know, the market, you know, we serve with financial advisors, you know, that's what they would love to cover, right? The tail risk, you know, and, you know, for clients who have a, you know, a lot of wealth, you want to be able to protect that. But again, this is kind of unintended consequence of regulation. And one of the reasons I, you know, I always say the root of all evil, I should probably say most evil in insurance, is the commission. So in long-term care, that elimination period is limited to a pretty short period of time because the regulators have tried to like make sure carriers aren't trying to sell you something that you're not going to get coverage for. Right. So if you have like a 3-year elimination period, and for people who aren't familiar with the products, that means you go 3 years in long-term care before you get a benefit. So they're worried about commissioned agents selling that product, you know, to just, you know, people, not for the purpose of taking care of that tail risk, but, you know, selling them the product as this is a long-term care product. So mostly the regulators want to see those products built and designed so that if you're paying for this insurance, when you get into a long-term care facility, your elimination period is going to be very short. So let's, you know, have the benefits start kicking in as soon as possible. So they really prohibit, you know, anything. I think it's most states, it's more than a, you know, a year or maybe two on the outside in terms of the elimination period. So, you know, it's one of those ideas that I think is, you know, a really strong idea, but there's got to be some championing at the state level in order to get them to be, you know, products that can be approved.
Got it. Well, David, this has been such an illuminating conversation. I know Jeff and I have learned a lot during this discussion. So thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today.
Oh, I appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks, Christine. And thanks, Jeff. You know, great questions. And, you know, again, really appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us on The Long View. If you could, please take a moment to subscribe to and rate the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Christine_Benz.
And at SYouth1, which is SYOUTH and the number 1.
George Cassidy is our engineer for the podcast, and Carrie Gretchick produces the show notes each week. Finally, we'd love to get your feedback. If you have a comment or a guest idea, please email us at thelongview@morningstar.com. Until next time, thanks for joining us.
This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording. Such opinions are subject to change. The views and opinions of guests on this program are not necessarily those of Morningstar Inc. and its affiliates. Morningstar and its affiliates are not affiliated with this guest or his or her business affiliates unless otherwise stated. Morningstar does not guarantee the accuracy or the completeness of the data presented herein. Jeff Patak is an employee of Morningstar Research Services, LLC. Morningstar Research Services is a subsidiary of Morningstar Inc. and is registered with and governed by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Morningstar Research Services shall not be responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other losses resulting from or related to the information, data analyses, or opinions, or their use. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of principal. Individuals should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile before making any investment decision.